In the world of sports, there's a game changer on the horizon. It's not a new team or a new player. It's a movement. It's called Her Game 2. Her Game 2 is a not-for-profit organisation championing inclusivity and diversity in sport. We believe in a level playing field where everyone, regardless of gender, can enjoy, participate and excel in the sport they love. Join us in making sports a game for all. Visit www.hergame2.co.uk to learn more and get involved. Her Game 2, tackling sexism and championing women in sport, because the love of the game knows no gender.
It's a fantastic start by the USA. Lloyd with Morgan streaking, she's to be the goalkeeper!
Welcome to the Australian World Cup podcast, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated Women's World Cup podcast, where we delve into the heart of the FIFA Women's World Cup. I'm Stuart Kavanagh, your host, and with me this week, as he is every week, it's Mr. Callum Logie. Callum, how you doing, bud?
Yeah, well thanks. Great to be really in the midst of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, mate. The competition has begun, which means we will be discussing match day one of the FIFA Women's World Cup competition this week. And we got a couple of special guests. Once again, we're joined by our social media guru, Jason Irvine, and Edge of the Crowd's chief Women's World Cup fixture attender, Mr. Dan Koppel. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I didn't realize I had that title. Look, I'm as you can probably guess, I'm loving the Women's World Cup. The best stat that I have for you is that I have now been to more women's football matches in the last week than in the rest of my life.
I'm sure you're not alone in that stat, mate.
And I've been to more women's matches than men. So it's not like it's just football has not been a thing until this week, but my goodness, it is now.
How many games you been to, pal?
3 so far.
Okay.
So I went to the Australia Ireland opener, and then France Jamaica on Sunday night, and the rip-roaring Colombian defeat of South Korea today. And yes, there are a few more plans. So I think I might have to give England Denmark a miss on Friday, unfortunately. There's a family thing that's come up, but the remainder of the Sydney matches is on the menu, or at least that's the plan. So fingers crossed.
Absolutely, mate. Geez, I'm glad we were able to tie you down for this podcast between, all the games you're going to. Jason, how you doing, buddy? You're taking care of social media. You're doing a great job too. Some of the graphics have been fantastic. Why don't you tell us about what's been happening over on Twitter and Instagram? And are we on Threads yet?
No, we're not on Threads yet. We've been talking about that. We should get there by the end of the tournament. certainly, the Australian World Cup podcast has a presence on Twitter and Instagram. You can find it at Australian WC Pod. And a lot more engagement on Twitter than there is on Instagram. Twitter obviously has the ability to have polls and everything like that. And so for each game, I've been running a poll on, who someone might think will win, whether it is, Team A, Team B, or the draw even. And, it's just all about, getting it on it in terms of ahead of each match, putting the question out there to people and, who they think will top each individual group as well. And so we've been getting a lot of engagement on that. Can always be better, obviously. So if you haven't gotten onto our Twitter and engaged with those polls, please do as match day two begins to ramp up as well. Yeah, so those have proved really popular, those polls. And obviously just as the competition ramps up as well, I think that we'll see a lot more of that engagement. But that's how it is at the moment. I'm pretty sure we had someone, I don't know where they were from, but they quote retweeted a recap from us in Spanish, I believe it was, Google Translate was. So we possibly could be reaching to Spain. I don't know. But it's good to see, the engagement numbers, increasing as the tournament goes on.
Absolutely. That global engagement is what a tournament like the FIFA Women's World Cup is all about. That's sensational to hear. I know you kind of stepped on match day two there, Jace, but we're not here for match day two. We're here for match day one. So why don't we get into our main segment and check out how match day one went.
Against Kerr. And it's saved. Kerr might get to the rebound. She does. Sam Kerr gets her 32nd goal.
The action is well and truly kicked off. Every nation has played at least 90 minutes, and we are going to take you through the first match day group by group. But of course, being the Australian World Cup podcast, first thing on the agenda, the Matildas. And Dan, I'm going to throw to you, seeing as you were at the game, why don't you give us just a little recap of what your experience was like down there when the Matildas took on the Republic of Ireland?
Yeah, so the big experience has kicked off already in the city. Heading in on what was a very, very packed train. Everyone shoulder to shoulder, and it was pretty cool to see the joy on people's faces when Hannah Wilkinson scored for New Zealand, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But the buzz around the train for a neutral match was kind of the second biggest buzz that we got before we got to the stadium, because the biggest buzz was as we were getting off the train, the Tillies broke the news that Sam Kerr was out, and we all thought that was a joke, to be quite honest. We all thought it was a bag because what do you mean Sam Kerr's not playing? But the atmosphere was still massive, regardless of the fact that Kerr wasn't there. And there was something, a really special moment in the stadium. They did a phenomenal welcome to country. There was a moment of acknowledgement of both of the First Nations peoples of Australia and of New Zealand, the Maori. They had an elder from I think the Darug people, who were the owners of the land of Stadium Australia, and a Maori elder. And they shared a Maori greeting. An Indigenous greeting. And then we got into the game. And I have to say, for mine, from inside the stadium, it looked a lot like the Matildas were a little bit stuttered, which makes sense. Obviously, the structure's a little bit different with Fowler at 10 instead of Kerr. Makes a huge difference. And we saw that with a few passes that just had a little bit too much on them or a little bit too high, which is probably a reflection of the fact that they're so used to playing with Kerr, they're not Fowler. And of course, it was great to get the win with the penalty for Catley. Excellent penalty, by the way. But to see that, and I thought actually Courtney Vine, Hayley Razzo and Ellie Carpenter were all superb out on the wings out wide. They did a really good job of challenging the Irish defense all night.
Absolutely, mate. That sounds like a sensational experience. I think you're podcasting with three guys who are insanely jealous of that, mate. But we all enjoyed the game in our own way. Now, Callum, you told all the listeners, I think last week, that you planned to sit in your room and just watch the TV screen very intently. How did your watch along go when the Matildas took on the Republic of Ireland, mate?
Yeah, good, good. I mean, it started off as that, just in my room by myself for the first half. But Mum had kind of caught a bit of the fever, the football fever. I guess all the news that was playing during the day had kind of got into her head to an extent. So we watched the second half together, which was very, very exciting.
Nice.
Being able to explain football to someone who really doesn't really understand it, it's quite fun to me.
So that was, Callum, I have to ask, when you explained to your mum, how detailed did you go about the offside rule?
Oh, no, I didn't really talk about offside. That's not something we believe in here at the Australian World Cup podcast. That's a foreign
comment. Nice one, mate. Sounds like a good time. I'll tell you what, if your mum wants to become an incident expert, direct her to edgeofthecrowd.com and then chuck a few episodes of the Australian World Cup podcast in her ear and she'll be up to speed in no time. Now, Jace, I believe we watched the game together, right?
We did. And Dan spoke about the disbelief of the Sam Kerr news before. I remember telling you about that news and you didn't believe it either. I think that feeling, that Dan was explaining, especially when he was around, so many more Matildas fans than, just you and me, Stewie, I think that was definitely felt. But you and me were watching it together. I think that we were obviously riding. We watched the New Zealand game before, and obviously we'll get to that soon as well. But we were watching the Matildas game. It was a very physical encounter as well. I think that Ireland, obviously led by their skipper, Katie McCabe, very physical, very tough as well. And I almost sort of, thought that, I think that it was a bit frustrating for the Matildas that they obviously couldn't get it away, especially in that first half. But obviously Steph Catley stepped up and slotted the goal, which was the difference. And even after that, I think that, the Matildas were maybe a bit, frightened about giving up that lead as well. Like, you never really felt that it was safe, or maybe like from my point of view, like I never felt like that lead was so, sort of secure. But obviously we maintained the control and ended up winning that 1-0 scoreline. And so it was really good to see the Matildas get off to a good start this World Cup.
Absolutely. It seems like a lifetime ago, but cast your mind back to the fact that Ireland had a practice match called off after 20 minutes because their opponents were overly physical before the World Cup. And I have to tell you, I wasn't the only one who was saying this around the bay that I was sitting in, but there were some suggestions that perhaps the Colombians weren't the problem in that matchup. And having now seen both of those teams live, I am only more firm in the view that perhaps the Colombian team was not the issue in that matchup.
Yeah, the Irish definitely, they definitely came physical, and Katie McCabe was really good. I imagine she was the pantomime villain at the stadium, Dan. But it doesn't matter because we picked up the 3 points. It was just a sensational match. It's a match that will live long in the memory for me. I personally thought Katrina Gorry was sensational. I think I was a little bit...
I'm going to disagree with you there about Gorry, Stewie.
Oh, yeah?
I saw Callum and Jez nodding, so I know I'm hearing the minority on this one. But for me, it was the number of passes that didn't go anywhere near the target. The number of balls that she gave away was a lot. And I know that some of that is the adjustment of not having Kerr and having Fowler and then kind of EVE, kind of Kyra moving up there into the 10. They had a few different plays through there, but there was a lot of ball that didn't go where it was supposed to. And we know Minnie's got the engine to go defensively, but the reason that she's preferred over EVE for me is the attacking abilities. And we didn't really get a great showing of that from Gorry. I thought actually it was not her best effort, and we know she's got more than that, and I expect we'll see more than that next time out.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point that you make about her forward passing. I don't think she was the only culprit there, though. I think the entire team sort of struggled in that regard, and I'll put that down, I think I said in my review, I put that down to stage fright a little bit. I think the Sam Kerr thing that you say, like the adjustment to not having Kerr at the sort of leading the line, probably had a massive impact on that too. But I was more rating Gorry from her defensive sort of output, particularly in this game against the Republic of Ireland, where they were playing very physically, and you know, we sort of needed someone to stand up. And for her, what is she, 4 foot nothing? She was the one that that stood up to the rest of the Irish team, and she, in my opinion, she was sensational. I really rated her. But that's covered off the Matildas. Let's just finish up Group B first, because the Canada-Nigeria game was a little bit of a non-event. Christine Sinclair missing a penalty. You boys got any thoughts to share about that game?
I think the big one for me was that Canada actually really struggled with fluency. They had the same fluency issues that the Matildas had, in that a lot of passes just didn't go where they went to, and they actually looked really vulnerable on the counter-attack when Nigeria got going, particularly the last 30 minutes. It felt like Nigeria were going to score. But that late red card is going to be a big factor. I think that leaves a big hole out wide for them, for the Nigerians, as they come up against the Matildas, who will obviously be out for blood in match day two, because a win there takes a whole lot of pressure off.
Absolutely. Callum, Jace?
Yeah, the thing about the Canada-Nigeria game is they probably saw the physicality of the Ireland team and went, oh great, we have to face that. And that was probably a little bit in the back of their heads. And they saw the Matildas won against that. So there's a level of looking at the other fixture and going, okay, I'm a bit worried. Obviously, they're professionals. They're never going to admit that they're thinking about that. And that's fair enough, you know. It was definitely a bit tense in terms of how they were playing against each other. There was a few tackles, bit of you know, the ball being given away, like Dan mentioned, from Canada, especially so. But I think the other thing is those teams are more well-matched than they appeared from the offset. I think Nigeria were actually quite good when they were able to string attacks together. I thought they had a good team spirit. They were really resolute in defending. One or two things going a different way, they could have easily gotten the 3 points.
Absolutely. It would have been a massive 3 points for any team to pick up, but neither of them did. Jace, unless you got anything to add about this match?
Only that, like, it's probably a bit of a disappointing way for Canada to begin their campaign. I think that so much was said about, you know, just how dominant they might have been. You know, obviously we're not discrediting the teams like Ireland and Nigeria. Like, there's proof that they can be quite good and competitive and everything like that. But I think that, yeah, I think they've come into the tournament as one of the favourites, and, you know, obviously given their achievements at Tokyo as well. And I think that they really sort of like struggled to break Nigeria down as well as they probably should have. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, like the expectations that they have, I don't think that they really played to those expectations. And, you know, like, I think that they'll still finish in the top two of the group, but I think that it's, you know, I don't know if it's it's really reflective of, like, yeah, just how they might play or, you know, go on with this tournament. But, you know, they sort of, like, yeah, dominated possession still, territory and all that sort of thing. But without getting that result, it sort of, like, makes it hard for them to be a bit on the back foot now. And especially, like, a team like Nigeria, I'm sure that Canada would have hoped to have gotten those 3 points, but obviously just came away with the one.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely keeps the group interesting, but we don't care about that. As long as the Matildas keep winning, the other three can fight it out. We're not worried about that. Anyway, just a quick recap of Group B. Australia sits top with 3 points. Canada, alphabetically, I suppose, since second with 1 point. Nigeria right behind them in third place on 1 point. The Republic of Ireland yet to register a point in the Group E standings. Now, two-word answers, boys. Australia, Nigeria, Canada, Republic of Ireland. Well, I guess Republic of Ireland is a bit longer. So two team answers. Dan, go.
Matildas and Canada.
Callum?
Matildas draw.
Ooh, interesting. Jace?
I'll go Matildas, Canada.
Okay, I'm going to go Matildas, Republic of Ireland. I don't know why, but I just got a feeling that the Irish might win. Let's move on to Group A.
Stewie, if you're right, the Matildas don't have to rock up against Canada.
And that is ideal.
It would be mathematically, like, they'd mathematically be safe.
Absolutely. Well, I wish I could say that that was my thinking, but it wasn't. let's just circle back to Group A real quick. And as we briefly touched on already, New Zealand, the other co-hosts, kicked off the competition, 4:30 p.m. kickoff, which wasn't great, but I think a lot of people were just watching it at work anyway. When New Zealand took on Norway, Switzerland took on the Philippines. Switzerland beat the Philippines 2-0. And of course, the Football Ferns took care of Norway 1-0 with a historic goal from Hannah Wilkinson. Jace, why don't you tell us your thoughts about this group and the fixtures that occurred on match day one?
Yeah, obviously, yeah, New Zealand-Norway kicked off, you know, not only Group A, but the tournament itself as well, ahead of that Australia game. Obviously, New Zealand being one of the co-hosts as well. And yeah, I think that, you know, again, like, it was, I feel like at this tournament, we're seeing, you know, some disappointing results from teams that we sort of expect a bit more from. And Norway are probably one of those teams that we do expect a bit more from. I don't think that New Zealand went into this game as favourites as well, but I think that, and I think that we spoke about it on our predictions episode, that you know, while New Zealand might have that hometown support, that maybe they wouldn't really, like, will the team to, like, have those results on the pitch either. But obviously it worked. Obviously we were proven wrong in that regard. And I think that New Zealand really wanted to start out off their tournament, you know, in the right way, obviously. And, you know, that came just after halftime with Hannah Wilkinson. And I think that, yeah, I think that it was really important for them to sort of, like, hold on and maintain, like, their footing against a team like Norway, who, you know, you might have expected to win this game. And yeah, I think that it was really important for New Zealand to get off the mark really quickly, bank those 3 points very early on in the tournament.
Absolutely. It was a huge result for them. And, you know, even if they don't do anything else in this tournament, they walk away with their first victory at a World Cup and their first goal. And they set forward.
And they had the first goal of the World Cup as well. Like,
That's right. Yeah. Callum, you want to talk to us about Philippines, Switzerland real quick?
So Switzerland won, is probably not particularly surprising. They have quite a strong team, despite obviously the teenager we've spoken about a few times not being available. They still look a solid team. They look organized. They're pretty fluid in their moves in midfield. They look pretty mentally stable and prepared for kind of what comes to them. And they handled, you know, a Philippines team, which kind of took a moment to get together, but we'll learn that they do actually get it together, and they have some good players there and could end up making some noise. They've already made a little bit of noise as it is.
Absolutely, mate. We won't step on that too much because I'm sure that's going to be a big part of our match day two wrap. But just to close out, Group A, Dan, this is for you, mate. Now, I'm going to make it a little bit different for Group A. Just give me the two teams you see qualifying for the knockout stages from Group A.
Switzerland, New Zealand.
No Norway?
No Norway.
I'm in love with Norway, Dan.
I think that loss is going to come back to bite them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're in a bit of strife. But, yeah, anyway, my love of Norway is well known on this podcast. I won't dwell on it too much. Let's bounce straight into Group C, where there was some massive victories, a couple of the biggest victories in the entire tournament. Japan took care of the Copper Queens 5-0 in what was just an absolute goal fest. And Spain easily accounted for Costa Rica 3-0. That leaves Japan and Spain remain top of the group with 3 points each, Costa Rica and Zambia in third and fourth, and facing a bit of an uphill battle to even qualify for the knockout phase already. Dan, do you want to talk about one of those matches, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have to say I came away from the Spain-Costa Rica match a little bit.
Interesting.
I know they won 3-0, but they had, I think it was 46 shots and like 81% possession and 117 entries into the final third. And you came away with 3 goals. Like, you should have come away with 14 goals. Like, there is with all due respect, like, Costa Rica are not going to win the World Cup, but their defense, it's not that their defensive wall was that brilliant. It was good enough to slow Spain down, but Spain really should have put a lot more through the net. And the fact that they only came away with 3 goals has me a bit concerned that when they come up against sterner tests, it's going to be a struggle for them to put up enough goals to get wins. And I mean, if you are a Spanish fan, I think you need to be prepared that when it gets to knockout stages, you might be going the full 120 and the lottery afterwards, because it doesn't look like this is a team that can kick enough goals to win.
Wow. That's the last thing you want to hear if you're a Spain fan heading to penalties. I hope on behalf of the Spanish that you're not right, Dan, but I think that's a pretty measured look at that game. I did see the 46 shots and was thinking myself, wow, just 3 goals. So 117 forward entries as well. That's just phenomenal. I guess Spain need to get their siders in and start hitting the back of the net.
That might have been 117 touches inside the box instead of 117 entries. But
yeah,
I don't think it changes the point, really. That's still not a high enough conversion.
Not at all, mate. Not at all. Absolutely. Well, we'll see how that plays out. Callum, do you want to talk about Japan-Zambia a little bit?
I would love to talk about Japan-Zambia. That was great.
Yep, fantastic.
That was one of my favorite matches of the match day. The favorite matches of kind of the tournament so far. Unfortunate for Zambia, it was rough time for them. They did quite well to hold in the first half. Only at the stroke of halftime did Japan take the lead. Once Japan had taken the lead, they really got it going. Some beautiful wing play. Jun Endo was fantastic. A brace from Hinata Miyazawa, who was fantastic in front of goal. Good goal poaching kind of instincts. And I think Japan showed that finishing instinct, that composure that Spain did not in that Costa Rica game. You know, ultimately, sometimes in big tournaments, it's not the best team, but it's the team that turns up on the day, right? And Japan on their day are good enough to beat anyone. And if they show this level of killer instinct in front of goal, then they could maybe go quite far.
Incredible. It was a great day for the Japanese and just a great day for football fans. 5 goals flying past. Maybe not for the Zambians so much, but the vibes from the Copper Queens has been fantastic throughout this tournament, and I don't think one loss is going to dampen that whatsoever. Jace, it's fallen to you, mate, to give us the predictions for the next set of Group C matches. You've got Japan taking on Costa Rica and Spain taking on Zambia. Shoot, who do you think's going to win?
I reckon this will be Japan and Spain. They'll probably put in similar amounts of goals as well, I reckon.
Okay, you heard it here first, mate. Japan and Spain, and that will book them. That'll book their ticket to the knockout phase as well. So that's interesting. Let's move on to Group D. Callum, I'm going to go to you for Group D, mate. Of course, Denmark defeated China 1-0. And England, somewhat surprisingly, struggled a little bit against tournament debutants Haiti and could only secure a 1-0 victory also. I guess they got the points regardless. Callum, you want to talk to us about one of those games?
Yeah, sure. If not for what we've seen a couple of times, the goalkeeper encroaching on the line, that probably would have finished 0-0. The Haiti goalkeeper was fantastic. They have a couple of players who play in the United States, and they have a couple of quite exciting players. You know, they had one or two counterattacks where they got, you know, rather close to scoring. Of course, Mary Earps in goal, one of the better goalkeepers. Going to be hard to get past her. They did really, really well. They made a great effort to show that maybe they're a bit stronger than say, a minnow, as you often see in these tournaments. They really gave England a scare and a run for their money. But what England fans can take solace in that it was a very similar way that they won their first game in the Euro. It was shaky, it was tough, but they got through 1-0 and they won the tournament. So perhaps, you know, Dan's pre-tournament prediction of football coming home could still happen.
Fantastic, mate. So just a quick one on that. Do you think it was Haiti playing out of their skin or England just having a bit of tournament jitters?
Oh, I'd say it was a mix of both. I think Haiti, you know, kind of went in there, went, we got nothing to lose. We're going to give it our all. They provided that, and that was really good. And I think England, slightly patchy form heading into the tournament, not entirely sure what's going to happen in terms of fitness and who they're going to have in their personnel. There was just a little bit of that kind of hitting around, which is why they maybe weren't at their very best, but they still played very well, created lots of chances. And if Russo can start putting away some of those chances, then they could be very dangerous.
Absolutely. And crucially, they got the 3 points, much like Denmark against China. Jace, talk us through this one.
First of all, like, obviously, I think that Denmark's goal scorer, it was 1-0 game. Denmark's goal scorer, Amalie Varnsgaard, was her first international goal as well. So
what a time to score it. What a time to score your first international goal.
Yeah, well, she actually said much the same. She said, you know, she saved it for the best time. I think that it was important that Denmark got away with a win first up. They haven't reached the knockout stages of a World Cup since 1995. And I mean, this is also the first time that they've qualified since 2007. So I think that, you know, they came with something to prove. They wanted to start off really well. It went down to, you know, the final whistle, obviously, like that. And I think that, you know, that win sort of meant everything. I think that obviously, yeah, they left it late. I think that, you know, they sort of showed that in their celebrations when the goal was scored and then at the final whistle as well, because it was a really tight contest. Both teams really played quite well. Perhaps people might have thought that Denmark, like a lot of other teams, might have, you know, put China away a bit more than they did, but, you know, it wasn't to be. And I think that that just shows that, you know, strength and competitiveness of this tournament that we have sort of touched on quite a bit over the last episode or two. And so it just shows the evenness of this competition. And I think that it was really important that Denmark got away from quite a dramatic clash with a win first up.
Absolutely. We did say that this one was going to be a tightly run thing, but between Denmark and China. Denmark, they could be a valuable 3 points for the Danes. Dan, I'm going to go to you, mate. Match day two of Group D sees England take on Denmark and China take on Haiti. How do you see those games playing out, pal?
I think England are going to warm into the tournament. I think they'll get the job done against Denmark. And I think China will be really driven to do better than they did against Denmark. So I think we'll see them getting the win as well. I think it's probably both be 1-0 or 2-0.
Perfect. Well, like I said before, you heard it here first. England to basically book their ticket into the knockout phase with a win over Denmark and China to make...
They're not just booking their ticket to the knockout, Stewie.
Oh, yeah? What are they booking their ticket for, Dan?
They're booking their way straight to the final where they're going to lose to the Chilis. So that's exactly how it's going to play out.
Yes, please.
I love that, mate. That's fantastic. Let's stick with Dan. We're going to go into Group E, where the United States took on Vietnam and the Netherlands took on Portugal. United States picking up a 3-0 win and the Netherlands just scraping over the line against Portugal 1-0. Dan, you want to talk about one of these, mate?
I want to talk about the fact that we're all on record, all four of us already, as big Sophia Smith fans. I would like to raise a petition that this be called the Sophia Smith Appreciation Segment. The brace in the first match of the World Cup, Team USA looked good, but Sophia Smith looked very good. And I think all of our predictions are going to end up looking pretty good across the end of the tournament because she is in ripping form already. There's no warm-up needed for her.
Absolutely. It was incredible to see. She's fast coming, one of my favorite players. I think that, like you mentioned, Dan, we are all on the record saying that she will either win the golden ball or the golden boot. I think one of us said golden ball, but I was definitely there for golden boot for Sophia. She definitely started like a woman with something to prove, and I think she might just take that next step and become the global superstar she is destined to be. She looked phenomenal. I actually, unlike you, Dan, I don't think England or the Matildas are going to win. I think the United States are going to win, and they look pretty dangerous in this game, albeit against a weaker Vietnam side, but you know, you can only beat who's in front of you, and it's great to see both the United States and Sophia Smith get off to a fantastic start. Jason, Netherlands and Portugal. What can you tell us about this one, mate?
Obviously, Netherlands, 2019 runners-up. They made an impressive start to this campaign. While it was a 1-0 scoreline, Netherlands scored in the 13th minute. I don't really think that it really reflected that margin either, but in a way that Portugal was sort of like, didn't really look like scoring themselves. So perhaps, you know, the Netherlands should have been, you know, a bit more hard pressed to find a couple more goals. They weren't too brilliant in attack, but their defense was pretty solid as well. Obviously that clean sheet. And so I think that it was a pretty encouraging win for the Netherlands, hoping to go that one step further this time around. And so I think that, yeah, obviously, you know, started off quite well. Yeah, there's been it was a pretty good performance. I think Portugal gave them a bit of a run at last year's Euros to get this result over a team like that, a team that maybe expected to win against, but, you know, maybe not 1-0 against. I think that was really important. And yeah, I'm sure that the Netherlands will be taking this result into the group stage and hoping that they can go deep just like they did 4 years ago.
Absolutely. And I'm going to break from a fractured pattern we got going here. And I'm going to ask all you guys who you think will win this next lot of games in Group E. The United States, that's because the United States take on the Netherlands in a World Cup final rematch from the last tournament. I'm going to go back to you, Dan. Who do you think is going to win this one?
USA 2-0.
Callum?
I think it'll be a draw.
Ooh, score draw or 0-0?
Score draw, 1-1.
Okay, no probs. Jace?
I think there'll be a few more goals, but I reckon the United States will get up 3-1.
3-1, interesting. I'm going to put my neck on the line here, and I'm going to go with Dan and say a 2-0 win. Another Sophia Smith goal or two would be very nice. And just in the other fixture in this group, it's the two debutants, Portugal and Vietnam, taking each other on. Callum, how do you see this one going, mate?
Portugal, near the end of that Netherlands game, looked very close to getting that in. And we've seen before that although they're a debuting team, they're probably maybe the highest quality debuting team, right? Like, they're a serious chance of getting out of this group. I think that Portugal are going to get the win, and I think they're going to win 2-0.
Okay, there you go. That'll make things interesting. If the United States beat the Netherlands and Portugal defeat Vietnam, I guess it's still tough for Portugal because they have to play the United States in the last game, but it will still make it interesting. Enough about that. Let's move on to Group F. I'm not even sure who I'm up to here, so I'm going to go to Callum for this one. Brazil beat Panama 4-0 with an early contender for goal of the tournament. You guys all saw their third goal last night, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Just a beautiful yes, thing to watch.
That is what they mean when they say a beautiful game.
Absolutely, mate. It was fantastic. And shout out to my old hometown, Adelaide, for putting together one hell of an atmosphere at Hindmarsh Stadium for that game too. In the other fixture, I think you were at this one, weren't you, Dan? France versus Jamaica?
I was. Me and 39,000 other souls on a school pop, which is pretty cool, I have to say.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Well, maybe I'll go to you first, Dan, as you were at this game, Dan. Why don't you talk us through the France-Jamaica game?
Yeah, this was a bit of a seesawing clash, and the French defense looked quite strong. It looked like the Jamaicans were really going to struggle to get through, and Bunny Shaw was really the only player who looked threatening for much of the match. But at the other end, the French attack was all at sea and didn't really look. There was sort of one period just before halftime where they had four or five corners in a row, but other than that, they didn't really look that threatening for most of the match. And this one was a nil all draw and probably deserved to be. It wasn't like anyone really got their act together for a goal or an attack that was brilliant. For me, it's a bit of a concern that we've seen the French play two matches in 2 weeks, and in both of those matches they really haven't looked a lot like scoring. And we know they're a top side and they're better than that, but if they don't turn it around, it might not take that much for someone like Jamaica to nick their spot in the knockouts.
That would be incredible if the French were on the plane home early. Watch this space. We'll see how that plays out. Callum, you get the good grace of talking about the Brazil-Panama game. Brazil looked so good in last night.
They did, yeah. Probably as good as you can look in a game of football. We've had a few impressive results already. Yeah, I mean, they were totally in control. Like, from the very beginning, the way they passed it, the chances they created, so fantastic. How about Borges' hat trick in the first game? Absolutely fantastic. Leading.
And she could have had four, really. I mean, she gave off that one for the third, the back heel assist, and she got the karma back with the hat trick, but could have been four.
Absolutely.
It could have been. And the fact that she did give that up shows that she's not a selfish player. So she earned her three goals, right? Mm-hmm. So top of the goal scoring charts, a lot of selfless players looking to, you know, make each other better and get big results. We kind of maybe looked at Brazil as kind of an outside chance to win it as we were kind of previewing this whole tournament. That outside chance has just kind of knocked down the door, and they're now well within the living room in terms of their favoritism.
Love that, Callum. That's a great analogy. Let's just run through Group F real quick. Brazil sit on top with 3 points. France and Jamaica equal with 1 point. Panama at the bottom of the table with no points and a negative goal difference. Jason, Brazil take on France and Jamaica take on Panama in the next set of fixtures for Group F. How do you see that one playing out?
Probably see that as a Brazil win, but maybe just by one goal. And I reckon Jamaica will get their first win.
Okay, there you go. Brazil and Jamaica. That'd be great. I think the country of Australia will explode if Jamaica get their first World Cup win. On
there were 39,000 people there, and I would say that there were a few hundred French fans, and then there were about 35,000 people subscribing to the ABF philosophy. Anyone but France.
Jamaica's celebrations, even like post game, in the dressing rooms as well. Like, you know, it seemed like they celebrated like they won. And so I hate to see the celebrations. I'd love to see them actually, to see if they actually did win, honestly. Like that's what you want a team to sort of embody, especially in a tournament like a Women's World Cup. And so, yeah, I really hope that they do get it over Panama and we see just how, you know, celebratory they can be, fans can be, the country can be. It'll be great.
Absolutely. Just a bit of a bonus question here, mainly because it's only just occurred to me to ask you guys, right? But would you say Brazil were the most impressive team of match day one?
Maybe just with like their passing and their ability to get into the box and, you know, shoot for goal. And, you know, they saw like one touch shots and stuff like that. But we'll get to it soon. But I reckon that Germany were a very, very close second.
I'm going to say that Colombia for me were one of the most impressive because we'll get to them later. But I thought that their performance, I mean, we know that Brazil are good. And for them to do this is an improvement on that expectation. But I think the gap between perception and delivery for Colombia was bigger than what we saw for Brazil.
Okay. Callum?
It's hard to look past Brazil in terms of their performance. It is a good point in terms of how good Colombia were. I almost want to say Haiti because they could have easily gotten a result from that game and that was really cool. But no, I think I will go with the Brazil. Yeah, the amount of players that they put together, so fluid in their movement and their passing and just their overall team play. Yes, we expected them to be good, but they're on that different level. And if they can maintain that level throughout the tournament, well then we could be seeing them bringing it home, I suppose.
Absolutely. Nothing better than watching a Brazilian national team just in full flight like they were last night. But enough about Brazil. Let's move on to Group G. And Callum, I'm going to go to you for this one because your second nation is in this group. Sweden unfortunately defeated South Africa. Italy picked up a win over Argentina. I watched the Italy-Argentina game. I wasn't impressed with either of those teams. But Callum, why don't you talk us through Sweden-South Africa? Tell us where it all went wrong for the South African.
It's hard when you're playing against a team with one of the best players in the world. But I thought South Africa had a pretty good performance, actually. Like, I think that they defended pretty well. They created a chance or two. I think their spirit was really, really good. And to only go down 1-0, it was pretty good fight. I think Sweden, they were always probably in control of that one, even though it took them a little bit to score. I think Sweden proved that even against teams which are going to have these huge performances, who are going to be, you know, doing their very best to dethrone them as they're one of the favorites, they have the composure, the talent and the ability to hold strong and get the result.
Absolutely, mate. And South Africa, are they still a sneaky chance to make some knockout football, or are you writing them off now?
Oh, look, it's difficult from here. Losing the first game is always difficult. But like you mentioned, Italy and Argentina didn't look great, so they could end up pushing through.
Okay, no problems. Now, Dan, I'm going to go to you for this one because I know you wrote the match day rap about this Italy-Argentina match.
Testing me, Stream. My memory's not that good.
Tell us about it, mate. Honestly, I watched it a little bit. I'll help you out here. It was a boring match. It was very physical. The goal was just okay. I think the right result was probably a draw, but Argentina just couldn't find the back of the net. Would you agree with those assumptions, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate that Italy got the win because as much as the two sides were even, I thought Italy's bench did make a big difference. And not just, I mean, Cristiano Aguilera also obviously came off the bench to score,
but generally that the spark that the Italians got off their bench was a difference to what Argentina got. Yeah, it wasn't the most memorable match, and someone who's consumed an awful lot of football over the last week, there's very little about this match that stands out in my mind, actually.
Absolutely. I think that's all we need to say about that Italy-Argentina game. Jace, I'm going to throw to you, mate. Argentina, South Africa, Sweden, Italy. What's going to happen in the next round of fixtures in Group G?
I reckon South Africa will find their first win. I reckon, they did well against Sweden. Obviously, Sweden, first team to come from behind and win, but I reckon it was positive signs for South Africa that they were able to get ahead in the first instance. So I reckon that they'll find their first win of this year's tournament against Argentina. And I reckon Sweden, Italy, I'm going to go a 1-1 draw.
Oof, interesting. That'll throw the group wide open, throw the cat amongst the pigeons, as they say. Just looking at Group G standings, of course, Sweden sit on top. Italy are second, South Africa are third, and Argentina are fourth. This has worked out perfectly because Group H saw Germany take on Morocco and Colombia take on South Korea. Now, Jason and Dan have both mentioned that they want to talk about the two winners from these fixtures. So, Jace, why don't you go first and talk us through the Germany-Morocco game?
Complete dominance by Germany, I reckon. Obviously, 6-0 scoreline, biggest of the tournament so far. I think that, you know, they really proved that they probably want to go deep this tournament. They, you know, while it was, you know, against Morocco, who sort of like, you know, still stood up right to the end, I don't think that Germany really took their foot off the pedal at all throughout this particular contest. I think that they played with intensity. I think that they controlled the ball quite well. I think they're really technical. Like, you know, they're really, you know, like they were in control. They had a bit of like finesse with, you know, their movements and the way that they passed the ball and the way that they, you know, danced around, you know, the Moroccan players as well. And so I think that, you know, Germany sort of put the competition on notice that this display is what they're capable of. Who knows, you know, I reckon that they'll certainly won't slow down in their goal scoring capabilities throughout this tournament, much less the group stage.
Yep, incredible. Jace just waxing lyrical about the Germans who just thumped Morocco 6-0. I think that was just yesterday as well. Dan, you mentioned Colombia a little bit earlier when I talked about the most impressive team of match day one. They took care of South Korea 2-0 at a game that, surprise, surprise, you're in the stands for, mate. Let us know all about it, pal. Tell us why Colombia are the most impressive team of match day one.
I mean, the fan base, for one, they sang the entire 107 minutes of play. When Colombia scored, the stadium erupted. But for me, it was the fact that South Korea came in as probably more fancy, but Colombia ran them ragged and looked threatening every time they had the ball, basically, for about the last 85 minutes. So South Korea definitely started better and had the better of it in the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes. But after that, it was pretty much one-way traffic, and Colombia looked better structured in defense. They were better at turning it around to go on attack. And Alinda Caicedo, on that wing, every time she got the ball, you thought it was going into the box and it was going to come close to goal. They looked organized. They didn't look like they were concerned at all by anyone from the South Korean attack. And they found holes. They cut back beautifully and they passed really well. And for me, they looked like a side that was really well drilled, well set up and well prepared. And, you know, they're not a heavy ranking, heavy hitting team. I think a lot of people expect Colombia to come say their piece at the group stages and get on the plane again, but they showed that they mean business here, and they're set up to mean business as well.
Yeah, that's a hell of a wrap, Dan. Is it safe to say Colombia have maybe found their way into your heart as your second team at the tournament now?
I think so.
Yeah, right. Okay, interesting. Callum, this puts you in an interesting position. You're doing the tips for the next match day, and Jason's favorite team, your second favorite team, Germany, is taking on Dan's second favorite team, Colombia. Callum, who's winning that game?
Look, Colombia looked great, but it's Germany with Alexandra Popp, yeah, with the bad taste of the Euros in their mouth that they want to wash away.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be probably a Germany win. I think Colombia put up a good fight, but I think it'll be, let's say, 2-1 Germany.
Okay. Dan, did you want to add something to that, mate?
I don't disagree. Colombia were good, but Germany were amazing. They were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Next level stuff from the Germans. Any other fixtures? South Korea, Morocco, Cal. How's that one going to go, mate?
That one might be closer than we maybe would have originally thought, just in terms of South Korea will be down on their confidence, having taken a loss. And Morocco, yes, they had a heavy loss. I don't think that's going to affect them too much. I think they're going to, you know, go in and just throw all they have at it.
All right, perfect. Well, that just to wrap things up, Group H sees Germany on top with 3 points, Colombia just behind them with 3 points also. South Korea and Morocco, that game that Callum was just talking about, you'd say the loser of that game is probably ready to book their plane tickets home. But that's the wrap for match day one. Anything to add, boys?
The Matildas continue their winning ways.
Yeah. All right. Perfect.
Rosa Val. Lovely run. Great goal. Brilliant goal. Rosa Val might have won the World Cup for the United States.
Fast becoming my favorite part of the podcast. It is rapid fire trivia time. Callum, it's your weekly shot at redemption in our rapid fire quiz. Again, I'll just remind all our listeners that thankfully, as the quiz master, I'm out of the firing line yet again. This week, it is Callum versus Dan. Callum, you ready?
Sure.
Dan, you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay, I've got 5 questions for you guys. Let's see who will reign supreme. Question number one. Who scored the first goal at the 2023 Women's World Cup?
Buzz.
Callum.
Dan was in first.
Hannah Wilkinson.
Very good. 1-0 to Dan. Familiar feeling for Callum, but we'll get into the second question. How many goals did Sophia Smith score versus Vietnam?
Buzz.
Callum.
Dan got in again. Go, Dan.
2.
Okay. It's 2-0. It's match point already. All right, boys. What was the crowd for the France versus Jamaica match?
Buzz.
Go.
39,734.
No.
Oh. Callum.
Yes, Callum.
I did have a look just because I remember the first neutral game that we had that wasn't New Zealand or Australia was 42,000. And I think this one was pretty close, but it was 39,045.
That is absolutely right.
Wow. Well done. Callum.
Well, he's pulled it back. It is 2-1. He's saved one match point. Next question, boys. How many penalties have there been so far in the tournament?
Buzz.
Go, Dan.
Too many.
I can't accept that, mate.
You're going to tell me I'm wrong?
The real answer is 8.
Oh, no, that's wrong. Callum, how many you got, mate?
Is it 7?
No, it is not. Listen, I'm going to give you the answer, right? And then you guys are going to have a second bite at the cherry for a point here if you can tell me how many have been scored. There have been 10 penalties so far in this tournament. How many have been scored?
I stand by what I said.
Callum.
Go.
3?
No, wrong. Dan?
4.
That's correct.
There you go.
4 out of 10.
Abysmal strike rate. Which,
yeah, it's woeful, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Are we counting the retakes?
No, I don't think that is counting retakes. I think there's been 10 awards of penalties.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Dan's won already, but we'll just do question 5 for shits and giggles. Who was the player fouled, resulting in the penalty being awarded to the Matildas?
Buzz.
Dan.
Haley Razzo.
Yeah.
That's correct. That's a 4-1 victory. Callum, the losing streak continues, pal. Unlucky. Dan, congratulations. You've won the Australian World Cup podcast rapid fire trivia. We don't have a prize. So I didn't think that through, but you know, you can wear it with pride. Tell everyone that you go to it. All the games you're attending, mate, you can tell them that you're the rapid fire quiz champion.
You're the quiz champion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll love that.
Goal given, Australia lead for the first time in the match. There goes the full-time whistle.
That's all for today's episode. We do hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup at edgeofthecrowd.com.au. Or if you're more of a socials guy or girl, head to our Twitter at AustralianWCPod and at edgeofthecrowd. Why not follow us both? Join us next week when we'll be discussing match day 2. We'll be one step closer to knowing what the shape of the final 16 is going to be. It's going to be a very exciting podcast. Thank you for joining us on the Australian World Cup podcast. Please subscribe so you don't miss any episodes and be sure to give us your 5-star ratings. Until then, there's Dan Coffle, that's Jason Irvine, he's Callum Logie, and I'm Stuart Kavanagh. We'll see you next time.